my fighting hole, and I can see him sitting there doing that tape.
This portion of our programming is brought to you by 20 Round Burst, the candy bar voted best tax waste of the war.
Mike had made me go out and buy a harmonica, and he gave me one lesson, how to hold my tongue and play one note at a time. But he knew he wanted background music for all this crazy crap, so he, made me learn how to, quote, play the harmonica. And that's me in the background with the Marine Corps hymn.
Don't be one of those unfortunates who suffer tragically from that malady sometimes referred to as Viet Cong yellow-striped fever. Stoop, stoop, stupefy your friends and maim your enemies. Exercise your God-given right to kill or maim at a distance. It's a great feeling to know that you can wipe out your entire neighborhood. Yes, be the first kid on your block to rule the world. See your Marine Corps recruiter today.
I really think Mike and I were just such kindred spirits. Yeah. Ironically, I don't ever remember us sitting around talking about the potential that one of us would die. You know, we just were not sitting there waiting to die.
I just don't know what to say. I'm a total loss for words here. I'm looking out of a window now, a hole in the sandbag wall in the back of the hooch. Looking out toward the east, out toward home. Long way from home. Actually, I guess home is closer straight down. It'll be great to hear your voices again. I can't wait to get a tape. Make sure that when you send a tape, it's on a...
Just sitting here listening to your tapes while we had breakfast. Terry, Mom, Cookie, and myself came up to Scranton. Sandy worked all day yesterday.
Hi, Murray. Trying to straighten up, get ready for Thanksgiving. And I'm starting to get Daddy's lunch or dinner ready. He eats his dinner about 12 o'clock. So when I prepare his, I'll prepare for the whole family.
Yesterday, Mom took me to see Mary Poppins, and that was a really good movie. I enjoyed it very much. So, take care of yourself, and don't do anything I wouldn't do, as everybody in school says. Bye, Terry.
Hi, Nick. It's Cookie. So, I came in to say a few words of hello to brighten your day. So, I'll see you, Mike.
And I appreciate you sending the money home, Mike, but doesn't seem right for me to spend your money, so I opened an account, and I'm putting the money that you sent home to me into the bank for you when you get home. I wish that you could be home for Christmas. That'd be the greatest thing in the world.
Everybody's anxious to get home, get back to their families and their girls. But while we're over here, we're not wasting away thinking about it. We're glad and proud in a way that's different than the pride you usually think of. I don't know, it's difficult to explain. Maybe I can do a better job on another tape sometime. This is where I belong, I think. More so than any place else.
These tapes, I assumed these tapes were long gone. I never even considered the possibility they'd still be around. Then I met Cookie in 97, and I couldn't believe that she had those tapes. I personally think that what he did with the tape recorder was practice. I think it would have been his portfolio when he came home. You know, he was going in radio when he came home. And he was just going to take that around and play it and say, see, this is what I can do.
The rest of the tape here on this side are sounds as they recorded them when they called 100% alert, which is pretty rare. And let me go get my bayonets. I can get it on this. This started to be a fun tape.
getting too much like a 12-cent combat comic book now.
It's always fun when you kill people.
Yeah.
The attack was officially, I guess, referred to as a probe. So what the NVA were doing is they were looking for a weakness. And that whole battle was taking place 30 yards from Mike and I.
Hey, Carter. How many of you over there? Three of you? Three of you in that hole? Okay.
There's all kinds of garbage going on. We don't know whether it's outgoing or incoming. No word's passed down like that. The illumination is being kept up. Every once in a while, a 60-millimeter mortar mission is called out to our left front whole mountain out there. In front of us looks like a 9-acre Christmas tree. Fire. Bullet feeder. High explosive. You can hear the illumination being kept up there. Those were heat rounds, high explosive. It's dark now. We're waiting for the illumination to go off.
That's a hairy thing. Hairy feeling. Sitting there in the dark with all that stuff going on.
Sounds of the enchanted forest.
Look at our Jesus. That's too close.
Airstrike. White napalm all over that place. Look at that.
You're in the Pepsi generation.
I don't see any indication of fear in his voice. We didn't know but what we were going to have to grab our rifles and M14 or and grenades and have at it. Because if they'd have broken through that point, then we were going to be in an all-out hand-to-hand combat. And that very potential, there was no way I could have stood there and did what he did.
Now it's dark, quiet. Everything's been quiet for about 15 minutes now. I was just crouching down in the hole there, talking to a hand grenade. I thought it was the microphone. I realized what I was doing. And the rain's just on time. Now it'll rain the rest of the night.
My memories of how Mike died are, he was walking point, and I was in a squad. I was carrying a radio, and I was probably five or six people back. And we were moving alongside of a Vietnamese village, and the village was deserted. And I heard one shot, which we knew was not an M14. We knew it wasn't one of ours. And then two more shots, and basically that was the end of it, and somebody shouted Mike was down. And I ran up through the fence row, and I saw Mike laying off to the side on the ground. I moved up beside him, and in my memory, he was looking at me. And so I had to run off, and we dealt with the firefight, and then they had to set up perimeter security to bring in the medevac helicopters. And so, thinking that Mike has been wounded, I'm sitting under the tree, and I'm kind of smiling to myself, good, he's gone home now. And I thought he had gotten the million-dollar wound. And I began to kind of, in my imagination, I could see myself driving across the Interstate 70, driving into Norristown. I pictured a house like I think he would live in, and I pictured myself walking up the sidewalk, and Mike sees me, and he comes running out the door in a big hug, and welcome home, and let's go to New York City. That was our dream. Then the helicopters land. I look up, and I see four people, one on each ankle and wrist. Literally, they've lifted him up like a sack of potatoes. They're running across the field. His head was hanging back, bouncing across the